Off top, your house is actually a collection of tiny ecosystems for thousands of species of insects and bacteria. Different ones can survive in the basement, then can survive in the fridge, then can survive in your salt shaker, then can survive in your bathroom, then can survive in your bedroom. And they all need each other to stay alive. Kind of cool when you think your house is a tiny little world for a bunch of tiny little creatures. Play the music.
This is the Dominique Foxworth Show.
What up, Charlie?
You just gave me nightmares.
Yeah,
about it was all weird. So
I was reading about this professor who used to do like insect research in crazy rainforest places because he wanted to like discover new insects. And then he started to discover that there are plenty of tiny organisms that live inside of our house and insects that live inside of our houses. And the thing that like that didn't surprise me, the number of species kind of surprised me, how many different species there are, like thousands in each of our houses. And depending on where you live in the world and whether you have pets or don't have pets, you'll have like they can tell things about the way you live in your house. And no matter how clean your house is, these things still exist. But the thing that really blew my mind, which is why I highlighted it, is that it's an entirely functional ecosystem. So like in places where like your basement, where it could be cold and wet, you'll have an ecosystem. But if you took the organisms from your basement and put them in your bedroom, they wouldn't survive. And like in your bedroom, there exists like mites that survive off of eating your dead skin cells. And then other bacteria survive off of eating those mites. And if you move them into the kitchen, they would not survive. And the same is true like in your freezer, where it's extremely cold. You can find organisms that live in your freezer that, of course, if you leave the freezer open and it all melts, that they won't survive. It's just kind of crazy to think about like how our world operates inside your home, and like how like I would have a hard time, or certain animals would have a hard time, like a polar bear would struggle to survive in Miami. Like the same thing is happening inside your little clean house. I was going to say your little dirty house, but it can be clean.
Yeah. I mean, microclimates, that's insane to think about. And also makes me, you know, I'm doing my part, mites. Eat my dead skin.
All right. Well, the hugest organism. Yeah, I was going to try to make a segue to Tom Brady off of this, but I don't got
it. He doesn't have any dead skin for mites to eat.
Well done. You did it. He refreshed his skin so many times. Well, before we get to Tom Brady, I got some cool personal news. I am about to go be a guest on The Daily Show with DL Hewley. I'm really excited about that. It's pretty cool. Like, that's like what real celebrities do. They're like late night guests. It's kind of weird because I don't think of myself as that.
This is so funny for the audience. Dominique tried to slip in. We have a group chat for this podcast and tried to slip in for our taping time. He's like, yeah, like maybe we could tape it around this time. I got something to do. I'm going to tape The Daily Show. And then just kept talking about like the time to do this podcast. And I was like, what? This is an iconic television show. This is what meant a lot to a lot of people.
It wasn't a slip in because like I haven't been telling anybody about it because I found out last week because like I'm not like a big celebrity. I was assuming the whole time that eventually it'll get closer and then like a real celebrity will show up and they'll bump me off. So I didn't want to tell people, but like it's day of. And so like I could have said, nah, I got something to do later so we can't tape then. But I intentionally put The Daily Show there because like I was feeling confident that it was actually going to happen. And so I had to push back today's taping 30 more minutes because I went to buy some cool kid clothes because I want to look fresh. You know, I'm not active on Instagram, but I'll get on Instagram and put up my new cool kid options and see if I can like, you know, when a kid goes to a new school or you go to college and you try to trick people into thinking that you're like different, you know, like you are the manager. Oh, yeah, that's what I'm doing. I'm opening myself up to a new audience and I'm going to show up fresh as shit. And they're going to be like, damn, that's clean. But what they really don't know is like I'm actually not that cool.
No, this is going to be great. This is the time to bring the A game. Also, if I have a small suggestion, this is the time for the Ashley Foxworth Instagram takeover. Let her run your social with your outfits for like the next 24 hours.
Yeah.
I should just let her following skyrocket.
Yeah, I should just let her take over. She like does a great job for those. So this might be, assuming I promote my podcast on there, there are a lot of Daily Show viewers who are just tuning in. And so like Ashley is my wife and she's a character on this show and she is awesome on every Tuesday where she is kind of the best thing about this show. But anyway. Now let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac weighing heavy on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue and ready for the play. And boom, Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good. The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and Tequila season. Hypnotic Liqueur, Barnstown, Kentucky. 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely. Enough about the Daily Show. Enough about that show. There's big news this morning. Tom Brady retired. Well, yesterday morning for you when you're listening to this, Tom Brady retired. It took over the morning shows that I was on. I'm going to try my best not to talk about it on the Daily Show. I'm going to tell DL.
Good luck.
No, I refuse. No, I won't. I will not do it. I'll push. I'm going to take a stand. But the thing about it that's most interesting to me is like the emotional and psychological parts of it.
Yeah.
And so like, yeah, he's really good. I think by the time you've gotten to this podcast, a day after he retired, you probably already know he's really good. You probably already know he retired. You know, he went to 10 Super Bowls, won 7 and all that stuff, has all the records by a mile. You know all that. The thing that I'm interested in is the next chapter, in part because there's a psychological component to transitioning out of football that you have a hard, or everyone has a hard time, I think, understanding the challenge there. And by everyone, I'm including players. Like, I was a player who had always maintained outside interests and always kind of viewed myself as like more than a football player. Whereas I think Tom Brady, I don't think he does. And I think lots of players don't, which is fine. And Tom Brady viewing himself and like kind of prioritizing football over everything else seemingly has paid off for him professionally. But I think it's going to make it really difficult for this transition and all the success that he's had in his career. He's been a part of a team and the goals have been clear. Like there's no, I think that was the thing that surprised me about retirement and the thing that concerns, I shouldn't say concerns, but the thing that I hope that Tom Brady can get a grip on is there's no scoreboard in that, you know, you won on Sunday or you know, you lost. And then when you wake up the day after the game, you're preparing for the next game. It's clear what you have to do. It's clear what your responsibilities are. It's clear how to optimize your life, frankly, at that point. The difficult thing about transition, at least for me, was it was less clear and it was the first time. And it's so weird because you don't think about it because you're 10 when I started playing football.
Right.
And then I showed like some talent there. So it started to become professionalized slightly for me in high school. And then there's coaches and there's other people and there's parents, everyone who's kind of telling you what you should do next. And then college, it gets a little bit more intense where my major was decided because I saw the list of majors that would allow me to focus on football. And it wasn't computer science, which is what I wanted to major in. It was something else. And like those things are decided for you. And then when you become a professional football player, like you, all of these kind of milestones in your life where you take more control of your own life for other people, as a football player, that doesn't really happen. And your agent like helps you out with so many other things. And there is no clear kind of pathway for it. And Tom Brady, I'm sure, has been very similar. And he's taken some more control and parts of his life. But that's the thing afterwards, is the idea that there is no scoreboard and you kind of make your own scoreboard. Whereas Tom Brady it's easy to determine whether he's had a successful day. How did practice go? He had a successful game, successful season, successful year. It all goes back to like the results on the field and figuring out what constitutes success for you, what constitutes happiness for you, I think is first figuring out that you have to figure that out.
Yeah.
It's like the first step. And then figuring out what it is another process of experimentation. And so many of us, I think, project onto somebody like Tom Brady, a happiness and a joy that frankly does not come with success and does not come with money. And we assume that, oh no, he's got this much money and oh, he's got a $300 million deal waiting for him with Fox afterwards. Like it's not going to be the same as football. And
yeah,
you can never, as, and people say this all the time, that like you can never fill that void, because you can't, but just saying it and experiencing it is a different thing altogether.
Yeah. And there's something that I think is really interesting about that, that I feel like gets lost for people who didn't play sports at this highest level like you did. And that's like, you give up your plan B because you have access to your plan A, and no one else has that. Like any other field, pivoting, finding something that you are more passionate about or equally passionate about, it's not easy, but it's easier because anyone with a normal job and a normal career has daydreamt about other things. And you don't really have that option when you're trying to optimize your entire life for this entire small window of being a professional athlete at the highest level, at the 0.1% of, you know, your job.
The other thing about that that I think should be highlighted is there are no other off ramps either after a certain point. So like if you're listening to this, you have a career that a lot of jobs are very similar. Like you can do what you're doing somewhere else. Like you can, your law degree is useful somewhere else. Your experience at the front desk is useful somewhere else. Like all the other experiences and other occupations are kind of useful somewhere else. If you want to change fields, you can learn those things. That's one of the most challenging things. And for a guy like Tom Brady, who's had the ultimate success, it's not the same. He made a bunch of money. He's had a lot of success, but he'll deal with this as he goes forward, because like in the regular world, he has the experience, professional experience of an 18-year-old,
right?
You know? So like he has a lot of power and money and influence. So that's something different. But for people, and he doesn't need to earn money, and that's a great situation to be in. But for people who still need to earn money, which is the vast majority of athletes, like there aren't, like if you fall short of your dream, but you've put everything into it, there aren't other opportunities that are similar. And that's even more highlighted in football, because there aren't any other real leagues. Like basketball, you can go play in Europe and make some money. Football, like you make it to the NFL or you start at the bottom of some other profession.
Right. And of course, Tom Brady will have unlimited options because he's Tom Brady and, you know, people want to be around him, around the greatest football player of all time.
Right. But it's not the same for Tom. You're right.
I do have a question. Did you like, okay, so I was watching his video today and I actually thought this was like a perfect retirement. It was so the opposite of if you want to Google photos or the video of Joe Montana retiring, when there are thousands, literally thousands of people at a press conference in San Francisco and he's retiring. But I think we actually got like a look into his psyche, and we got like this humanity and an emotional response that actually made me feel kind of sad. It actually made me think of something that Michael Jordan said, which I think is actually an apt comparison here, where we saw all these videos of him in The Last Dance and he was like, of course I want to defend the title. And that's part of the reason why he came back for the Wizards, because he never got knocked down off of his perch on Mount Olympus. Like he never got the conclusion to his career. I think a lot of people, when Brady, you know, lost last year after his heroic comeback against the Rams, like, oh, that's a perfect ending. It's not. Knowing that there's finality was the ending that he needed. That was the only way for him to find closure, because he couldn't walk off the field being like, I'm still better than you motherfuckers. I could have won that game. I would have won the Super Bowl.
Yeah. I mean, his numbers this year suggest that he can still play. That's a unique thing for an all-time great. You don't see too many all-time greats kind of walking away. I feel like our memories of many of the all-time greats are like Michael Jordan, where he was still putting up points, but it was clear that Michael Jordan was not anywhere near his peak performance. But Tom Brady, like the raw counting stats, the yards and touchdowns, it's like you could throw that in the middle of his career and it wouldn't look bad. I mean, he had more attempts than this year than he ever had. So I could imagine him convincing himself that he could go elsewhere. So I think we haven't given. Yeah, I don't even want to put it on the table. I don't think he's coming back, but no, I don't think he is either. Yeah, it felt final because last year.
The only way he's going to come back is if like something that happened in San Francisco happens again in the middle of next season. Like, Trey Lance, Brock Purdy get hurt again. And it's like, all right, ready-made Super Bowl contender, a quarterback away. And I was on this on Monday, but like,
I didn't
crazy
even consider
situation.
That. I didn't even consider that. But yeah, that is a possibility. Him and J.J. Watt both. You're just going to be hanging out, waiting for somebody to give them a call. And in week 17, about to go into the playoffs, and they need a little boost.
Swimsuit. Check. Sunscreen. Check. Phone charger. Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or in a carry-on. And the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HOURENERGY.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HOURENERGY.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
All right. You made an interesting point when we were talking before the show about just this era of athletes. And it's obviously an end of an era for football, but it feels like there's been just an incredible era of all-time greats across a number of sports.
Yeah. I mean, to me, it's crazy that we have this coda all at once across professional sports. And what I mean by that is Serena Williams retired, Roger Federer retired, Tom Brady retired. LeBron is coming towards the end. He's passing Kareem Abdul-Jabbar in a record we thought was maybe unbreakable. Ovechkin's on track to pass Gretzky's all-time scoring record. Messi capped his international career winning a World Cup. Ronaldo had a slightly more ignominious end to his international and club career. Even Aaron Judge passed Roger Maris. And like, what I think it's so interesting about this is a few things. Normally when these athletes come to an end of a generation and when there's an all-time great, there could be a vacuum, there could be a void, and we don't think sports are in a better place than where they were. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people are like, well, this just proves it. Like no one's bigger than the game. The game will roll on. But to me, I think the opposite way, these people have been bigger than their sports. And I think that's like tremendously important to what that means. Because there's an entire generation of acolytes of these people that are starting to fill the void. And like Patrick Mahomes might not end up with the same amount of Super Bowls as Tom Brady, but the NFL's in a great spot. You know, Luka Doncic and Victor Wembanyama and, you know, Giannis, name whatever star, they might not end up with 40,000 points like LeBron, but the NBA is in a great spot. And what I think is fascinating about this is we talk about player empowerment, and our friend Bomani Jones did an incredible piece on what LeBron's impact on player empowerment actually was on his HBO show Game Theory. And it made me think about it a lot. And what made me think about was that things are not perfect in sports. Athletes are making a ton of money. They are not making as much money as owners, as much of the revenue share as they should. But what this generation of athletes across sports has done is something that I think is you would be fascinated by. It's launching a potential billionaire class of young athletes. The amount of money that's been invested into sports because of these icons that have changed the way that we are interested, view, think, and consume sports across platforms, on the field and off the field, is making opportunities for guys. Like you look at guys in their mid-20s in the NBA, in the NFL, that are going to end their careers with more than $500 million earned on the field in their early 30s. Wow. And that's going to have the like spider web of those effects is going to be gigantic. Like we want sports to change and who owns teams, how they own teams, how they respect players. That's all. That is how you have money that can change that at this point.
I think, I see where you're going, but I guess understanding what will actually happen as a result of this, I think that's where we diverge. Is I think you're right. It's been incredible, incredible opportunity, and I have to celebrate it for those players. I'm proud of those players. I'm happy for those players. And I think all the players who came before them to kind of pave this way are nothing but happy for them. But I think what actually happens is kind of like, this is going to be a weird connection, but this is the first thing that came to my mind is sometimes you hear people talk about how integration kind of separated the elites and like all Black communities, and it kind of took out the most successful, and then those people moved to white neighborhoods and their kids went to white schools, and they started going to white churches and everything. They started going to white schools, and what happens is those individuals become to whatever degree that they can assimilate, they become a part of the elite class and less committed to the advancement of their group. And so like it's a bit of a stretch for like the significance of the comparison, but like that's what I imagine happening more than anything is like you're not going to bring up all of the players to a higher spot. What you are going to do is create another class within sports, like these super athletes, but those athletes will never reach the level of ownership. I mean, I think LeBron can probably get on a team or something, but they'll never reach that financial level. I just don't see that happening, because if the sport's doing well enough for them to do that well,
the
ownership class is doing so much more. Like, you wait till we see what the Washington Commanders ends up going for. Like, people are talking like $7-8 billion. So right now we're talking about guys who are at half a billion or coming close to a billion or surpassing a billion. That ain't enough to buy. That's not enough to compete with Jeff Bezos.
Yeah. My only thought is just it changes the power structure, and the fact that you have guys who are being, you know, who have net worths like they own a small hedge fund are now the people who ownership has to negotiate with, who ownership has to consider selling to at some point.
See, and that's where
we're going to end up with power positions in post-career even.
Right. So like the union stuff is interesting, because the league will have to negotiate with some of these players. But the bigger gap you put between them, between the top tier players and the, like, I don't know, middle class or lower tier players, the less they have in common. And the less they have in common, the easier it is to divide them. And the easier it is to divide them, the easier it is to like put pressure on them and CBA negotiations. So while I love all this money going to players, if it's not like, I wouldn't say the word fairly distributed.
It's definitely not fairly distributed.
No. It's not evenly distributed. I think it's probably fairly distributed. The best players are getting the most money. I think
still underpaid.
Yeah. And so, yeah, that's two different things. It's not fairly distributed between players and owners. But once you get over to the player side, then it's closer to fairly distributed. Well, basketball is different because they have those max salaries that artificially suppress them. But the fact that the salary cap exists in general is a whole nother thing that I talk about every time I get a chance. So I won't bore you guys with that. But that is the thing that stands in the way, frankly, to me, of the power shifting back to the players. Like the power that the players have is to withhold their labor. And it's really difficult to withhold your labor against people who are worth tens of billions of dollars. They can win a war of attrition against small countries. So I think it's the players are in a tough spot there. But anyway, I think the bigger picture that you were pointing to is just like this. You touched on a bunch of things. So like on the field, court, these athletes that you're talking about, like, it's the idea. I guess we thought so many of the things that they're doing weren't going to be done, you know,
possible to be repeated.
Right. And so like we always talk about Jordan as the greatest winner, in part because we can't talk about Bill Russell in that way because we're like, that's a different generation. It doesn't count. Now we, yeah, it's like a different sport. All the Bill Russell won 11 titles. And we would have thought that that wouldn't, what Jordan's dominance wouldn't happen again, particularly in a sport like football. Brady won 7 of them. And, and what LeBron has meant for, and we could have Jordan versus LeBron debates, but like my, in my view, LeBron is a better football, player. Yeah, he's probably a better football player than Jordan, but a better basketball player also. And my argument for that is post Dream Team. Like, look at the NBA now. It's international. Yeah. Like, the people who Jordan was competing against, and it's the same argument that you would have for Bill Russell versus Jordan. Like, yeah, Jordan played in a league that was more professionalized and more talented. So, like, and Bill Russell also wasn't the type of player that Jordan was. He was on great teams, and yeah, the league was a little bit underdeveloped. The league developed to Jordan's pace, and he dominated. It's far and away, in my view, more talented now. But like, Jordan's dominance in his eras, obviously more championships, but LeBron's dominance in relevance for the extended period of time and still won 4 titles, may win some more, not this year, but maybe at some point. Like, that to me is something that's hard to match, especially when you look at the talent that's in the NBA right now. But I feel both, I feel stupid both ways. Like, I feel silly saying that it'll never happen again, because like, we would have said that before, whether we're talking about basketball, football, soccer, or tennis or anything. But I also feel stupid saying, yeah, it'll probably happen again, because who would have thought that we'd have someone after Kareem and after Bill Russell, after Larry Bird, and then after Jordan, we get LeBron. And now we got Victor coming in the league, who everyone thinks is going to be better than everyone else ever. And
that's actually one of the things I think is so fascinating about this generation, is after Jordan, there was a vacuum. After, yeah, like in the early 2000s of football, there was a vacuum where it was just empty, and there was not this like insane dearth of talent that was captivating to audiences. Like, I grew up watching, you know, NBA games that were slogs of like 90-75 and Gilbert Arenas hucking 7 threes and shooting 39% from the field and being like, ah, great player. But everyone's like, it wasn't Jordan. Now, like, the way that LeBron and Brady and Peyton Manning and Steph Curry and Roger Federer and Nadal have inspired a generation of athletes and bridged the gap, played long enough that there's an entire developed generation of people who are exactly ready to try to, not exactly ready to take the mantle and be the greatest of all time, but
there's not going to be a fall off. Product
incredible. No, no fall off. And also, these people, like, unlike Jordan, was like impossible to match. We looked for baby Jordans, but that's impossible to find. Like, what LeBron did is big guys, Karl Malone size, play on the perimeter now, because you're looking for the next power, like, guard. Right. Guys like Steph Curry, if you're 6'2", you can shoot from 35 feet. You look at Peyton Manning and Tom Brady, and it's like, all right, well, now you have this incredibly, insanely talented, creative group of quarterbacks that can go to the line of scrimmage like they did and be like, they're running cover two. There's man here. I'm going to attack that. It's not just like, here's the wing T formation that we're going to call in from the sideline in the era of like, yeah, I don't want crap on him, but like Troy Aikman is throwing for 2,800 yards a year. And that's not like inspiring a next generation of quarterbacks that's going to play that way. These guys have changed the, how much control athletes have on the field. And I think that's led to a product that is significantly better than it was 20 years ago. And that's fascinating. It happened across all sports at once.
Yeah. And I think that you can kind of trace everything in modern life back to the internet. But I think it's accurate here too. It's like, you imitate what you see, and the like proliferation of clips and games and access to like YouTube tutorials and everything. Like, my son spends probably too much time on YouTube, but like, he reminds me of things that happened that I've forgotten about in sports. And the idea that we saw coming up these young players, the like internationalizing internet, like help to internationalize basketball. I mean, no one cares about football outside of here, but like, the same is true for any like major sport that crosses borders. But even within this country, within this country's football, it's like you, when you watch football, you notice that these guys are more like intelligent and informed about the game than we were at our age. And that's part of the evolution of the game, which like leads to like higher competition at a lower level, which like, yeah, it's evolution. Like we talked about it at the top of the show and ecosystems, like sports is an ecosystem also. And in those ecosystems, there are dynamics that create that are created to cause to help the players or the beings inside the ecosystem evolve to better maximize the opportunities. And that's why linebackers now are 220 pounds. They're not 250 anymore because the game is faster. And that's why you got 7-footers like Wembanyama. Like if he was born 20 years ago, they'd have said, get in the post. And you never would have figured out the fact that he has ball handling skills and can shoot. So, yeah, it's evolution. So it's both ridiculous for us to say we'll never see it again and ridiculous for us to say that we're obviously going to see it again.
By the way, just before we pivot off this, did you see that video of Victor Wembanyama that he filmed it on his iPhone? It was like seeing the game from his perspective.
No, I didn't see that.
God. They show him, or he shows himself shooting a free throw and making a layup. And it looks like he's playing Koosh basketball in his bedroom. Like the ball looks like a grapefruit in his hand, and he releases a right-handed layup by barely getting off the ground, and he's above the rim. It's the craziest thing I've ever seen.
All right. Give me a second.
It's in the Zoom chat.
All right. This is ridiculous. It looks so small. Gosh, the free throw line looks like he could like reach out and
Looks fake. The right hand.
The way he's holding the ball, he doesn't even jump. That is ridiculous. He seems like he's got personality too. I'm looking forward to everything, Victor Wembanyama. I remember when we were just calling the French guy a year ago. Now, anyway, this game is going somewhere that is impossible to follow. Like, you have to be a freakish athlete. And we've had this conversation. You get mad at me every time I say this, but like, there are no young American stars that can compete with like the international players. Like, the rest of the world is so much better than us at basketball. And like, Jason Tatum, I guess Scoot Henderson, you're looking at him coming in. Other than that, Ja Morant, but these are guys who are very good, but none of them have a chance to be Jordan or LeBron. All the people with chances to be Jordan or LeBron are from somewhere else, which like doesn't bother me. It's just going to be an interesting experience, and I assume that we'll all embrace them because we're not xenophobes here in America.
Oh yeah, are we? Americans are becoming role players in basketball. Yes. It's a tough pill to swallow. It's like,
yeah, like Luka, Embiid, Jokic, Victor, who else? They're all the Giannis, all the best players.
Shea.
Yeah, they ain't from here.
That was the sad thing that got me with Tatum, was realizing that, like, I was looking at like that tier of players just below Luka, Giannis, and Jokic and Embiid, and I was like, oh, it's Tatum and Zion. I was like, oh wait, Shea's just as good as any of them. He's putting up numbers like he's Jordan in 1987, and we don't even pay attention to him because he's in Oklahoma City.
Yeah, I mean, Zion has a chance, I guess, to be one of those top guys. If we had a all league draft, I'm not getting to Zion first. But I feel like Tatum had a chance last year. Had they won the championship last year, I think we'd be having a conversation about Tatum being near the top. I still wouldn't draft him over any of those people that I named.
He's probably like the fifth or sixth best player in the league right now, which is crazy because he improved and is like one of the best defensive wings in the league. He can do everything on offense. And yeah, I mean, it's insane. The big guys. I could talk about Jokic all day. The Jokic-Embiid matchup earlier this week, when Embiid like said he's friends with Jokic, I know he reached for him, but like took it personally and demolished him in that fourth quarter and put up 46 points. Like, unbelievable that those two guys are dominating the league right now.
I like how you just went to Boston there for a second in the fourth quarter.
Quarter. Yeah, I don't know why that came out.
You're not from Boston, but yeah, no, that game was fun. But we got one more week of football before we can go all in on basketball. So we'll hold off on that. But yeah, I don't got anything else. You got anything else, Charlie?
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. How's your social battery right now? We all go through things socially where we don't feel like ourselves, where we don't feel like going out, where we feel drained, or we're not bursting with energy. And when you're not feeling right, that's where BetterHelp can come in. It's helpful for learning positive coping skills, how to set boundaries in so many different ways, for which it empowers you to be the best version of yourself. It isn't just for those who experience major trauma. Therapy is for more than those people, and it's there to help you. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online. It's designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists anytime for no additional charge. It's there for you. It's there to help you. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp.
Visit BetterHelp.com/DF today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/DF.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPN pods. That's amazon.com/ESPN pods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I want to ask you one thing about Sean Payton, because this is the other news of this.
Okay.
Why did Sean Payton want to go to Denver? I know why Denver wanted him.
You asked a question. I answered it.
Yeah.
It's money. This is
just money.
And yes. I mean, from what I understand, I guess we can't report this because like I haven't done all the proper research, but I will tell you. I'll text it to you, the number that I heard that he got, and it's more than is being reported. And from what I understand, having talking to some people who talked to him, that was a big part of the negotiation, was he wanted a particular number met. And so that's what it comes down to. Like, I came down to getting that price. All right, here you go. Here's the number. North of this. And there is no salary cap on coaches, so get your money, Sean. I ain't mad at you. Good for you. I'm not a hater. I just wish that that would spread to everybody, no matter their race or position.
That is fascinating, because obviously we don't know what coaches make, and like there's speculation that, you know, Belichick has been making an insane salary for the last 9 years. That makes a lot more sense, because I was genuinely wondering why he wouldn't just sit on the Fox set for another year and then take whatever job he wanted next year if there's a better opportunity.
One, it's money, and two, it's ego. Is we, again, like I bring this up sometimes when we talk about Tom Brady, but I'll bring it up when we talk about any athletes, honestly, or coaches, is the ego. We're all like, man, I wouldn't want to coach in a division with Patrick Mahomes, or man, I gotta wait for this perfect situation. That's not how Sean Payton thinks. Sean Payton is not scared of Patrick Mahomes. He thinks that it's a mountain to climb. He's not afraid of the challenge of fixing Russell Wilson, his current reclamation project. He's like, I did it with Drew Brees, who had a bum shoulder, and even before he tore his shoulder, the Chargers drafted Phillip Rivers. I imagine that in his mind, he made Drew Brees into the Hall of Famer that he is. And he sees that Russell Wilson has some talent. And he's like, yeah, no problem. Easy peasy. He's better than Drew Brees was at his first stop. Well, I'm coming in. I'm going to fix it. And that roster has talent and looking forward to the opportunity. And if he doesn't get it, he don't care. All that text I just sent you.
Yeah, I mean, That makes a lot more sense, because from my perspective, I was looking at it, I was like, what if this doesn't work? Like, this dude had was considered like an all-timer already.
Yeah.
Like, seems like a huge risk to take. But yeah, I mean,
it's actually not a huge risk, because if it doesn't work out, we've already started blaming Russell. We'll just keep blaming Russell.
Yeah, I guess that's fair.
And then he'll be fine. It's not like he's coming into a blank slate or he's taking over a good team. They're at the bottom right now. If they don't figure this out, I don't imagine people are going to be like, man, Sean Payton blew it. They're going to be like, man, Russell's irredeemable. Even Sean Payton couldn't fix him.
And just word to the wise to Sean Payton, all you have to do to not become a total joke, just do not send horrifically racist emails like John Gruden, and we will totally turn on it.
That was the last guy who came out of the booth for a big contract, right?
Yeah, and he became even before, he got caught being racist, he also became a joke, which was my fear of, like, is that worth it for Sean Payton?
Yeah, well, I mean, he can control becoming a joke and being racist, so hopefully he controls that. Anyway, appreciate you, Charlie. A lot of fun. I like this episode. This was a good one.
Yeah, Christina, one of the best.
Thank you. Sarah Abbott, thank you also. Addy Cohen, appreciate it. See you next week.
This is the Dominique Foxworth Show.